Whether life's journey is full of triumphs and victories, riddled with struggles and disappointments, or maybe a little bit of both, it's been our experience that God's compassions never fail, and His faithfulness is new every morning.
Welcome to Hole in the Roof Chronicles with Paul and Jamie Hamilton. Join us as we transparently share stories of God's faithfulness in our lives to be an encouragement to yours. Welcome to another episode of Hole in the Roof Chronicles. My name is Paul.
Hey, my name is Jamie.
And today we're going to continue our discussion about mental illness. Last episode, we kind of talked about things that went on in my childhood and high school and college and kind of how it set the stage for what was to come. So today we're going to continue our discussion, and today's topic is going to get a little heavy with some of the topics we're going to talk about. So I would kind of advise that you not listen to this with your small children in the room, but we're just going to go on and talk about our topic.
Yeah, so let's just jump in today. I wanted to start today off with a short introduction to an article that was written for Lifeway Research by Dr. Presson. Raymond Presson is a licensed Christian therapist for over 30 years, so he knows his stuff. He is a newspaper columnist and an author of more than a dozen books in print. Presson's most popular book is kind of an interesting title, When Will My Life Not Suck? Authentic Hope for the Disillusioned.
Wow.
He co-authored the teen edition of this book with his son. And so I just kind of wanted to start off by reading just this comment he made at the beginning of an article that he wrote for Lifeway. And I thought it was a great introduction to what we were going to be kind of going over today. This is what he started out by saying. He said, quote, "Too blessed to be depressed," unquote, was the message on the church's sign as I passed by. He says, "I wanted to turn my car around, park next to the sign, get out, take all the letters down, and actually fling them into the grass. I wish being grateful was the simple medication to prevent depression, and counting our blessings was the sure cure for anxiety." Mm. For many people of faith, sleepless nights become dreaded days filled with loss, grief, sadness, anxiety, hopelessness, conflict, tension, or anger. The result is that many feel not only defeated, but also so guilty or shameful for not living the, quote, victorious Christian life, unquote. They may believe if only they were more spiritually mature or more disciplined, if only they had more faith or were more obedient, then they would win this battle. The struggles with mental illness are deep and complex, and it's not only naive to oversimplify or over-spiritualize the causes, conditions, and cures, but it can also be very harmful.
Mm, wow, that is so powerful.
And that, when I read that, it resonated with my heart. It resonated with my spirit because you and I, especially you, most definitely dealt with the situation many years ago.
Yes. So when we dropped off last time, basically, Jamie and I were married. I believe I shared that my mother had cancer. And it was April of 1989 when my first break happened. And kind of to back up a little bit with the story, you know, my mom had passed away in January of 89 from cancer. And I had been unemployed since November of 1988. So I had already been unemployed for a couple of months when mom died. Mm-hmm. And then, to be honest, I really didn't look that hard for a job right after mom died. I was really consumed with helping my dad, dealing with my own grief, dealing with everybody else's grief.
It was a difficult time.
Yes.
For sure.
And so, of course, since I'm not working and I was living on unemployment, our bills were mounting. Mm-hmm. And so here it is a few months after mom's passed away, and I start looking for work, and I'm not really having a lot of success finally ended up with a job with a local cookie company doing sales. And I don't know if I've ever mentioned this before in our podcast, but I will now. I am not a salesman. I'm not. That is the last job I should have.
That's true.
I've had different sales jobs over the years, and all of them have turned out miserably. I've usually lost them within weeks because I don't sell anything.
Right.
I don't have that personality to be a pushy salesperson. Mm-hmm. So here I am making telephone calls to grocery stores around the country, trying to sell them our cookies, not having good things. So things are miserable. Stress is mounting. I have a lot of depression. I've got a lot of grief over my mom. And really, honestly, I wanted a change in our life. I was, you and I discussed it many times, to get a fresh start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about maybe moving away from St. Louis.
Yes.
Going someplace new where we could just meet new people, get a fresh start in our life, and that things would be better.
Yeah. I remember we even looked in for a while. We looked into working for Habitat for Humanity.
Yes.
We even had discussions with them, and they were like, well, you know, you'd have to move your family to Atlanta, Georgia. You would basically live in a communal home.
Right.
So our family would get a room and a home.
And at the time, we had three children. And so it was going to be Paul and I and our three kids living in a home with other people who had children.
Yeah.
And that was a downer. I wasn't sure I could handle that.
Yeah. Plus, we would have to raise our own support. It was basically you were going to be kind of a missionary. And yeah. Again, unfortunately, I hate to say it, missionary work involves a lot of sales because you have to convince people yes. to donate. And so we changed our mind and didn't do that. So I had looked into some other jobs, and one of them I had looked into was a possible job at a law firm. I have a cousin who lives in Springfield, Missouri, and he had mentioned that I was studying to try to be a paralegal at the time. And he was like, hey, we might be able to use you. Let's see if there's any openings.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there wasn't. And I really honestly couldn't handle looking at you and telling you there is no jobs.
Oh, and I think it was the rejection. I think rejection hit you big time because you had been trying so hard to make things work. And to get that rejection, maybe to somebody that was mentally doing okay, wouldn't have been a big deal. But I think when you're already going through so much, that piece of rejection was, I think, maybe more than what you could handle.
Yeah. So honestly, I began just, I disassociated myself from the situation that I'd been told there was no job, and I began manufacturing a job. To the point, Jamie and I actually went for a weekend to Springfield to look at homes.
Yes, we did.
We put a application down to lease a house, at least mm-hmm. to own a house. It was just...
It all seemed legit to me. It seemed like it was just normal. Nothing made me think that anything was wrong. It all just seemed like it was going according to the plan that we had talked about.
Yeah. So, of course, within a couple of weeks of doing this, my disassociate from reality and reality began to collide.
Mm-hmm.
The lady who was the owner of the house, I had given her my work phone number as my contact number. So she calls me at work at the cookie company and says, I'm confused. I'm talking to the law firm down here that you say you're supposed to go to work for. They've never heard of you. There is no job down here. What's going on? And honestly, I was just like, oh, it must be a mistake. You know, there's a problem. I can solve the issue. You know, give me a couple of days to figure out what's going on. I'll get back with you. Please hold our application. And hung up the phone. Well, to be honest with you, I really don't remember much about the next 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I know I came home. I know I didn't say anything to you about what was going on in Springfield.
Correct.
And I went to bed. And this is where some people have weird thoughts about my testimony. I woke up and that's the only way I can explain it. I woke up 5 days later in Atlanta, Georgia, with no idea how I'd gotten there, no idea where I was, and totally confused. Because for me, it went from I went to bed to here I am waking up.
So why don't you describe a little bit of what you mean when you say woke up? Because it's kind of a weird terminology, but explain what you mean by that.
Yeah. The best way I can describe it, for the longest time, I had no way of describing it except going to sleep and waking up. That's the only way I could describe it to people.
Mm-hmm.
I know this is going to sound a little silly to people, but Disney Plus created a Marvel series within the past couple of years called Moon Knight.
Mm-hmm.
And the first episode with this character totally explains what I'm talking about. I know this is weird, but bear with me for a second. The character of Moon Knight is a superhero with multiple personality disorder. And he changes personalities. Well, in the first episode, they really don't allude to, oh, he has multiple personalities and he's switching personalities. The character literally, like, there's a scene where he's driving, he's being chased and he's driving a car and these guys are pulling up next to him with guns and everything. And then all of a sudden you see his eyes kind of roll back in his head. And then literally the scene transports and he's in a wrecked car and there's blood and dead people. And he's like,
What happened? What's just happened here?
Yeah,
that type of thing.
And that show so described how I felt.
Wow.
Minus the ninjas and the superheroes and all that, but blinking of an eye and everything around you changing.
Yeah, and I, you know, for me, at home with three kids, I don't think I knew what happened. All I know is my husband was gone. I mean, it was like I had no clue. I was in the dark. I literally had no idea what was going on. Of course, something like that happens and my mind went to all the bad places.
Yeah.
You know, I began to get worried that was my husband having an affair on me? Did he just up and leave us? I mean, there was all kinds of things that were going on and I was afraid to reach out to anybody because I was so afraid and I was embarrassed. I didn't want anybody to know what was going on.
Yeah.
It was a scary time for me and our three kids as well.
Mm-hmm. So after I kind of woke up in Atlanta, you know, I contacted Jamie. She had told me I'd been gone for a few days. And, you know, of course, I couldn't explain what happened. I was just terrified.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad wired money to me and I was able to put gas in the car and because I had driven there in our car.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to drive back to St. Louis. And for the next 2 weeks after that, I spent time in a psychiatric ward of a local hospital trying to get diagnosed with what was going on.
Right.
And the original diagnosis was bipolar disorder.
Yeah.
Which at the time was just manic depressive disorder. But
And I remember, you know, when you got the diagnosis, it's like it was weird because I was like, there was a relief.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, we figured this out. But then I was just terrified. Like, how is this going to affect his life? How will this affect our life?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a long time ago. And it was just, there was a lot of just mixed feelings on top of it. It was like something we wanted to keep private. I didn't want anybody to know.
Yeah.
I didn't want our church family to know. I really didn't want our family to know. I didn't want anybody to know because it was just like, it just wasn't acceptable conversation. It wasn't something we should talk about.
Yeah. Well, and the reason they went with bipolar was because of my severe depression after the incidents would happen.
Mm-hmm.
The doctors would say, well, you're obviously having a manic episode. That's why you're leaving. And then once you're done with your manic episode, then you're depressed. So that's why you have manic depressive disorder. And I understood the depression because I was severely depressed, but I didn't understand the manic thing because when I would be taught what manic episodes were, I would always go, well, I don't remember that.
Right.
You know, yeah. I don't remember doing that. I don't, you know, well, that's the explanation. And that's kind of what was pushed. And so they put me on Prozac, which is not a drug that I would recommend in any way, shape, or form. I don't even know if it's still out there.
I mean, it wasn't the perfect drug for you, but, no. You know, one thing I think we learned over the years was that it's kind of trial and error. You know, they give you things and then you get off of things and they put you on something else. But I do remember you starting out with Prozac.
Yeah. So here I am. I'm taking Prozac. I'm dealing with the side effects of that. I was able to find employment with a local title company in Clayton, Missouri, which isn't too far from our home, and tried to return to normal life. Of course, we were living in apartments or rented houses during this time period. I was making minimum wage, I did look it up to confirm it. Minimum wage in 1990 was $4.25 an hour.
It was a rough time.
Yes. So here I am. Jamie was at home with the kids.
We accessed public assistance. We had to. We had no way to buy food. I had no insurance. I mean, it was really hard. It was a very hard time. But I always had hope that things were going to turn around. Things were going to get better. The medication was going to help. If we just kept this private to ourselves, nobody'd know. We can just, you know, move ahead in our life. And unfortunately, in January of 1990, we realized that wasn't going to happen.
No. I had my second episode in January of 1990. And honestly, this is one I don't talk about very often. It's a very sensitive to me. Again, I don't remember anything. I just remember I was at work. I had gone to work for the title company, which if anyone knows anything about title work, it's very stressful.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, getting phone calls, we need this, where's that, why aren't you finding this? You know, I've got bills mounting, I've got all this stuff, and I had another break. And honestly, I still to this day don't remember how long I was gone.
Mm-hmm.
But I woke up, I was in Los Angeles, California. I cannot tell you how I got there. You know, had no car, because that was one of the things, you kept the car, so I couldn't run off with the car. And I was strapped down to a hospital bed in a psychiatric ward. It was actually an intake. I never made it into the actual ward. I was in the intake area.
Right.
Strapped down to a bed. And of course, I'm flipping out. I'm sorry, you know, you wake up. Imagine waking up and being strapped down to a bed. You're in restraints.
Yes.
You don't know where you are. People around you, of course, they're also having psychotic issues. So they're yelling and screaming and all this stuff. And I just panicked.
Yeah.
And the nurse came in, said, doctor's going to come in and talk with you for a while. So he came in and they weren't taking the restraints off.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of laying there like, okay, what's going on? Well, he looks at me and he says, you know, you were found in a hotel room in Los Angeles by police and you attempted suicide. That we found two empty bottles of pills. We found no pills at all, but we found two empty bottles of pills. And if I remember correctly, it was like 150 sleeping pills.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, you took the whole thing. He goes, you shouldn't be alive.
And that matches up with what was said to me. So my memory of the situation was you were gone for almost 2 weeks. And we were frantically looking. You have to understand that this was before cell phone times.
Yes.
There was no cell phones around. There was no tracking anybody. It was only landlines. I mean, the old-fashioned time period. And I have to be honest with you. It's like you're talking to God. You're mm-hmm. asking God, please help my husband. Please show me where my husband is. Please bring my husband home. Please protect my husband. It was prayers constantly, all the time. Sadly, my kids remember a lot of that because unfortunately I wasn't spending probably as much time with them as I should have. Because I feel like I was spending more time just praying and asking God to help us.
Yeah.
Because I was so frightened and so scared. And I finally received a phone call. And the phone call was from Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And when they explained to me what was going on, I was beyond words. There were just no words to explain how I felt inside. And I think the saddest part about it was, is there just wasn't a lot of, like, my friends were not really supportive.
Yeah.
Like, they were more like, I think he's having an affair. I think this is happening or that's happening. Maybe he's on drugs. Maybe all this stuff. And, you know, even to the point of looking at me, I mean, these are my Christian friends looking at me and saying, you know, I think it was a mistake. You and Paul got married. I don't even think you should have gotten married. What I think is, I think you need to take your three kids, save yourself, and get out of this relationship.
Yeah.
And I can remember, you know, one after another, they would come to my home while Paul was gone and say this to me. And it would just be like, they'd leave and I would just slouch down on the floor and cry because I didn't know what to do. I didn't know who to reach out to. The only person that I could reach out to was the Lord. He was the only one. And there was a knowing in my heart. I can't even explain it to people. But I knew something was wrong.
Yeah.
Something beyond anything any of us understood. Something was wrong.
It was scary. Since I was not a resident of California and my family was like, you know, we just want him, you know, once he's stabilized, we want him to come home. I was never really admitted. I was released to my uncle who lived in California, spent a day with my aunt and uncle while arrangements were made to fly me back home from California to St. Louis. I do remember coming home and you picking me up at the airport. It was a very tense ride home because I have no answers and you want answers. But at the same time, we're both grateful to see each other.
Yeah.
So it's a very mixed bag. And really, honestly, that's how our relationship continued for a long time, was me looking for reasons of why I'm doing this.
Yeah.
I mean, I never looked at anyone and said, I don't have a problem. I never looked at anybody and said, I don't want treatment or I'm unwilling to take this pill or that pill. I mean, I went through so many different drugs by psychiatrists to try to stop this behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't begin to tell you the amount of drugs I've been on. The majority of them had horrible side effects.
And I think, you know, on a personal level for me, there were just trust issues.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
You just felt like you wanted to trust. This was your husband. And you felt, you knew in your heart something was wrong. But everything almost just felt like it had to be removed from him, like all access of everything, access of money, anything. Like, you couldn't trust him because I had no idea what was going on. We just couldn't figure out what was going on. And I mean, even after, I mean, because this was not the only time.
Oh, no,
that
no.
You left.
No, it was not. For the period between 1990 and 1997, I would say I left a lot.
Yeah.
I couldn't even give you a number. I mean, sometimes it was months apart. Sometimes it was a year apart. Majority of the time, it was weeks apart.
And then they would last for like maybe a couple days all the way to like a week.
Yeah. And there was no explanation for it except the thing that we began to realize, the pattern was a lot of stress in our lives, financial, marital. Of course, I'm losing jobs because I can't keep a job because every time I would leave, I'd lose a job.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly unemployed or I'm constantly looking for work.
And that doesn't look too great on a resume when you're trying to find a job. So
I mean, I remember one day figuring it up. During that time period, I had 21 different jobs.
Yeah.
And most of them are weeks or months long.
And I think some people are kind of wondering, well, you know, Jamie, what are you doing? And we had made a decision to homeschool our kids.
Yes.
That was super important to us. We were living in the city. The city schools were and still are not that great. And I had committed my heart to homeschooling our children. That was what I felt the Lord had called me to do. And one of the things I didn't want to do is just uproot them out of our normal things that we were doing. So it was a trusting God with a lot of things. And believe me, the Lord came through with miraculous things for us in regards to Christmas gifts and paying bills and all of that. I mean, that's a story for a whole another podcast of how God's so faithful, even in the midst of a crisis. It was a rough time. It was very difficult. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think part of it also was we were also trying to figure out what was going on. For a lot of times, and this kind of links back to what Jamie read at the very beginning, it was treated as a sin problem.
Yeah.
You know, I won't badmouth the church we were attending at the time. They were very helpful. Everything went good as far as them wanting to help, but they were treating it as a sin problem.
And so, I don't think they knew any better.
No, I'm not blaming, because there was no diagnosis. There was just, this is what you have, and, you know, you've got to take this, you're doing this, this doesn't explain this. No, you don't have this. You know, doctors were changing their mind all the time of what I had. And I remember specifically one time the pastoral staff of the church we were going to looked at Jamie and said, you know, maybe if Paul pays the consequences of his actions, he'll stop this behavior.
Yeah.
You know, because Jamie was always very willing to let me come home. Now, it would be tense. It would be uncomfortable. There would be a lot of trust rebuilding. But I was home. And I appreciated that. Well, this one time I came home and she looked at me and she says, I've talked to Pastor so-and-so and the decision's been made. I can't let you come back into the house.
And that nobody will even begin to understand how horrible that was.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I had to have my kids gone from the house because I thought if they saw me say that to their dad, what would they think of me? Yeah. And it was a thing.
Yeah.
And believe me, when he came to the front door and I had to refuse him entry to our home, I just lost it. I literally lost it because this was not in my heart to do this.
Yeah. So during that time, you know, living on the streets for a while, being homeless,
And my husband does know what being homeless is. And I think many people don't even realize that. Some of the stories that he shared with me about living out in the streets it's scary.
Yeah. I mean, it was some of the best times spiritually because God became very, very real to me.
Yeah.
And I crossed that line from, oh, I'm a Christian and I accepted Christ when I was 7 to God is essential for my life during that time period. Yeah. And that's the only good thing that came out of that time
period. Like an awakening. Yes. It was an awakening.
It was one of those things where God became my God. God became real to me on a personal level. And I know people will laugh about this. I got my call into ministry during this time period of mental illness and problems and so on. God called me into ministry while I was in the midst of all of this problems. And this dark period lasted until 1997, not the mental illness aspect of it, but the uncertainty of what's going on. And we began to see a marriage counselor because, you know, we're trying to rebuild trust. We're trying to keep our marriage together. And there was a session in 1997 where we were supposed to go see her on a Saturday, and I left.
And I made the decision to go forward because originally I was just going to cancel the session. But there was just this push from the Lord, no, go ahead and go. And I'm glad I did.
Yes.
I'm glad I did. And I'm going to read a scripture that ministered to me. It still does minister to me. It's Psalms 46, 1 through 3. And it says, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, and though the mountains tremble at its swelling.
Amen. Well, that's all for this week. Jamie and I wanted to thank you for listening to our podcast today. To learn more about us and our ministry, please visit us at www.holeintheroof.co. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lastly, if you are in need of prayer, we would be honored to pray for you. To reach out to us for any reason or to send us your prayer request, email us at holeintheroofministries@gmail.com. See you all next time as we invite you into our living room and discuss how awesome God is.